Welcome back to the Reading and Writing Podcast. My guest today is Riley Redgate, author of the new novel, Alone Out Here. Amy Kaufman, author of the Aurora Cycle and the Elementals trilogy, wrote about Alone Out Here. Utterly absorbing and packed with heart, action, and questions that lingered long past the final page. I read it in a single day. Riley, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Jeff. It's great to be here.
Sure. Well, if someone listening hasn't yet heard about your new novel, Alone Out Here, how would you describe the novel?
Yeah, I can give a little elevator pitch sort of a situation. So the very, very short version was sort of pitched as a Lord of the Flies in space situation, which I think is basically accurate. The long and short of it is it's set in the year 2072 in the shadow of a forthcoming climate disaster that'll be triggered by a volcanic eruption. And so in anticipation of this event, the world's leaders and scientists and engineers have been rallying together, or trying to, in an attempt to build a fleet of generation spaceships, which will get, or are meant to get, at least a percentage of humanity off of the planet safely. So it's about a year, maybe a little bit less, before this event is forecasted to happen. And there are a bunch of teenagers and kids who are touring the prototype of this fleet, which is the only completed ship at this stage. And the eruption happens sooner than expected. And these kids are the only ones to make it off of the face of the Earth alive in this prototype ship. And so they have to grapple with the knowledge that they are essentially the only remaining humans, the only ones to escape alive, and that the legacy of humankind lies with them. And will they be able to rebuild a functional society in this enclosed spaceship environment, or will they kind of begin to repeat the mistakes of their parents back on Earth?
That sounds great. Do you remember the original idea or impetus that led you to write Alone Out Here?
It's tough for me to recall, because the first germs of the idea came to me in sophomore year of college, which would have been 2014. So that was 8 years ago now. I think I remember making like an iPhone note to myself about a concept where a bunch of kids who, I think my initial idea was that they were all like prodigies of different types who were like trapped together on this ship for some reason and graded against each other. But yeah, parts of that fell by the wayside and were sort of replaced by this like post-apocalyptic idea.
Well, you mentioned earlier the Lord of the Flies comparison. Okay. I'm curious, is that something that you had in mind while you were writing it, or was it something that after you wrote it and started showing it to other people, like your agent or editor, that other people noticed the comparison?
I think it was not there from the beginning. It wasn't like I set out to write a Lord of the Flies in space, but I definitely kind of realized it during the writing process. I think like anything that is interested in, you know, sort of like politics among an isolated group of kids or teenagers will pretty inevitably face the comparison. I definitely began to realize it pretty soon.
Sure. Well, what was your initial writing journey that led you to writing and getting your first novel published? If I'm not mistaken, you had your first novel published while you were still in college. What got you started writing, and beyond that, what got you actually submitting your work for publication?
So I started very young. I was a very ambitious child. I wrote my first kind of novel length thing in, I think it was freshman year of high school, and it was atrocious. But I worked very hard on it, and I tried to revise it, and I tried to go through all the steps, and by freshman or sophomore year of high school was submitting kind of query pitch letters to literary agents to kind of test the waters. By the end of high school, I could kind of put together a functional narrative at the least. So I started drafting my My first book, Seven Ways We Lie, I started the earliest parts of that in senior year of high school, and wound up signing with my literary agent after, I think it was between freshman and sophomore year of college. So, I have just always been interested in traditional publication. I think the appeal in it to me is having kind of, input and feedback from more experienced people and people who whose entire living it is to find and polish books. I was from a very young age drawn to submit and to get rejected a million times.
And what was that rejection process like? I mean, obviously you stuck with it, whereas, there are, people out there who work on a manuscript and once it gets rejected, they just can't, bear that. I'm just curious, like, have you thought about it? You know, what kind of kept you going in the face of that rejection?
Yeah, I don't know. I think I've always kind of had the mindset that negative feedback is useful because obviously like a form rejection where you're not getting any feedback at all, that's not going to be super useful to you. But if somebody even gives you like a shred of advice, then that gives you kind of perspective as to what's connecting or what's not connecting. So I think like what drove me to keep going was not even just like the end of the road dream of having a book on a shelf, which as like a teen writer, I was just like obsessed with the idea. but also like the knowledge and the feeling that I was getting a lot better at writing with each subsequent project. And like, my first disastrous project I sent out and I got, out of dozens and dozens and dozens of these pitch letters, I think I got maybe one or two requests to see more of the project. And then to see that it is like a grueling process, but then to see that number shift over the course of multiple projects, I think I had pitched maybe four books by the end of high school, like to see each subsequent one getting more interest and getting more detailed feedback, was like a concrete way for me to recognize that I was improving, which, yeah, I think that's sort of like semi-objective view is really valuable to, young writers, but also writers of any age.
Sure. Were there deliberate things that you did to try to improve and to try to decipher feedback from these rejection letters?
Yeah, that's a great question. There definitely were. I think so. Usually when I do like school visits or when I'm talking to young writers or teen writers, I'll get the question, what is your number one kind of piece of writing advice? And usually my answer to that question is to distrust like 95% of writing advice. because as a young writer, I took a lot of that stuff to heart. Pretty much anything I found on the internet, I would be like, okay, this person's an adult, so they must know better than me. And if they're saying that something is a rule of writing, then that's something that I need to take to heart and to apply to my writing. No passive voice, no adverbs, like, sort of prescriptive advice like this, I internalized very strongly. And I think that's pretty damaging to a young person who's like trying to develop their own style. Like, I think it's better for a young person to just have a really weird style and then to, dive deeper and deeper into their own particular quirks, interests, and weirdnesses than to try and make their work into kind of a one-size-fits-all style of writing. So, like, to your question, I think, like, yeah, that was kind of what I tried to do to improve, was to take in as much advice as possible. But it's an approach that I would sort of question now, because it sort of subjugates the individual's like interests in favor of like a crowdsourced idea of what is correct or good.
Sure.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And I'm curious, did you ever take, I know that some writers and novelists do this. Did you ever take a book that you really enjoyed as a reader and try to just kind of tear it apart, so to speak, and try to figure out why it worked?
Let's see. I think I have not really, I didn't major in literature in college. I was an economics major. And that's kind of, I think, the only venue, like academia would be the only venue in which I would pursue kind of a long written analysis of a book in that way. Mm-hmm. I think most of my thoughts of my favorite books, I could express them and I could discuss them with friends and do often. But they're not, those aren't like thoughts or feelings that I would write down for myself.
Sure.
Try and list down in that way.
Well, what was your writing process when you were working on Alone out here? Are you someone who outlines a novel extensively before you dive into the narrative?
Yeah, it depends. It depends. Certain projects, I will have a nice, tidy outline. For my second book, Noteworthy, I definitely had it was an 8-sequence screenplay structure outline. It was extremely rigid. But you know, that doesn't hold true for every project. My third book I wrote non-chronologically, which was a disaster and I'll never do it again, but, it is, an approach that I've taken. This one was a bit of an odd duck. I started it, as I said, in sophomore year of college, but then I shelved it after around 100 or 150 pages. I was like, this is bad and, not cohering, and also I'm in college and have a billion readings to do and don't have time. So I set it on the shelf and came back to it in 2017, at which point I was like, there's still a lot in this idea that interests me. I then began to sort of fill in the gaps, because that first chunk of writing from college was also sort of non-chronological. It was like these scattershot scenes that I had and ideas that I had. So in 2017, I was trying to string those together and form like a coherent book out of it. And then I wound up doing pretty extensive edits after the book was bought by Hyperion as well. So this one did not really have a functional kind of outline prior to the writing of it. I sort of went in with vague ideas, discovered what was happening, and then had to rewrite from there. But that is just how this one went. It's not like a regular process.
Sure. Well, have you started working on a new novel yet?
Yeah, I have. I have one coming out next year. I'm actually co-writing it with my sister, which is exciting. So that'll be out next year from Abrams. And I'm also working on a couple of other sort of projects that don't really have a home yet. I have written in the young adult space so far, but, as I get farther and farther from teenagehood and young adulthood, I'm reading less of that. And so I'm also interested in writing in new genres. And the other project I'm kind of working on right now is a dark, nearly like horror adjacent adult fantasy about monster hunting.
Wow, that sounds good. Well, you mentioned earlier that your primary writing advice, which is, if I can recap, is that to not pay attention to 95% of the writing advice. I'm curious, do you have other thoughts about writing that you would offer for someone listening who is in the process of writing their own stories and novels?
Yeah, I think, all of this is, I feel like all of my advice sounds like it is so, kind of self-centered in a way, like to be selfish about your own interests and your own time and what you would like to do. I think another thing I would say is to kind of ignore, ideas of what is popular in the climate and what is publishable in the climate, because I remember I was on a panel with a guy named Dan who co-wrote The Shape of Water with Guillermo del Toro. And it came from like an idea that he had sort of, you know, alone in his room. And he had all of these strange ideas that he was so sure would only ever kind of interest him. And it really stuck with me, his description of like, you know, going after his own interests, because obviously that story is such an unconventional one. And there's no reason that anyone would look at that sort of concept on paper and be like, this is going to connect with like millions upon millions of people worldwide. But you just can never know what's going to connect with people. And so I think writing to your own interests and tastes, whether that's like, you know, disregarding the sort of, sometimes there can be sort of a publishing industry like disdain between genres. Like you might find that people in literary circles are like, oh, commercial fiction or genre fiction offers nothing. Like if you love genre fiction, then ignore those people. Or like if you write very strange literary fiction, then people in commercial genres might be like, yeah, no one reads your books. But like, you know, ignore that as well. So like I think, yeah, it's there's a Vladimir Nabokov quote, which I'm going to mangle. I'm just going to paraphrase it, actually. But I think it's something along the lines of every day when a writer wakes up, they should aim to please one person, and that's the person they see in the mirror. And I think that's great advice. Like I really think that, you know, there should not be a desire to have kind of like sameness in your work when compared to other people's projects, which is like, I don't know. Obviously, like intertextuality is fun and interesting. And as somebody who was like inspired along the way by Lord of the Flies, it's not like, you know, throw everything you've read out the window. Like, obviously, you want to read and you want to develop your tastes and find your interests. But I think, yeah, just like focusing on your own course and not letting potentially kind of negative voices out there in the world steer you toward one path or another.
That's great. Well, what novels have you read recently that you enjoyed?
Let's see. I recently read in young adult, I read a book called A Heart in a Body in the World by Deb Colletti, which I thought was phenomenal. It's kind of a spoiler sensitive book, but the basic concept is that, yeah, the main character, we see her in chapter one sort of coming out of a fast food restaurant, and then she begins to sort of run just in no particular direction. It's clear that something kind of awful has happened to her in the recent past, and she's still processing it. And then slowly we see her coming to the realization that she's going to run across the entire country, and layers of what drove her to this decision and what drove her to these feelings are sort of peeled away in a really satisfying way. In young adult, that's that. I'm currently reading for the first time The Haunting of Hill House, which, I mean, it's amazing. Like, Shirley Jackson is a master. And I recently reread the first two books in the Name of the Wind series by Patrick Rothfuss, which I hadn't read since kind of adolescence, and it was fun to come back to them and reevaluate.
That's great. Well, where can people find you online if they'd like to learn more about you and your novels?
Yeah, my website is rileyredgate.com. My Instagram is at Riley Redgate. I have a Facebook that I update like once in 2 years, maybe. it's just facebook.com/reallyRileyRedgate. And that's probably the list.
That's great. Well, again, we've been speaking with Riley Redgate, author of the new novel, Alone Out Here. The novel is available now, so go buy a copy. And Riley, thanks for doing this interview.
Thank you so much for having me again. It's been great.
Great. Thanks a lot.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.